Nate E. Kufal. Roach?
Predator saved you.
May it please the court.
It's always a guess.
Yes. Timothy Norlinger on behalf of the appellant David Kufal, who was convicted at a jury trial of first-degree sexual assault of a child. He was sentenced to 25 to 30 years imprisonment after a conviction on that case. The appellant alleges insufficient evidence and ineffective assistance of trial counsel, as I am appellate counsel, not original trial counsel in the matter. Due to the time constraints, I'm going to spend most of the assistance of counsel claims. Inquire if you have questions with sufficiency. The facts in this case center around the victim, Nikita Stowe, who was in an apartment on March 16, 2019. Ms. Stowe is the daughter of a Christina Willis, who at the time in March of 2017 was dating the appellant, Mr. Kufal. Ms. Stowe indicates that her mother left on that morning, that she remained at the apartment with Mr. Kufal, in that she was also present with another individual by the name of Greg Lear, whose apartment it was that Ms. Willis and Ms. Kufal were staying at. The important facts with regard to the conviction in this matter center around Ms. Stowe indicating at some point in that morning after Mr. Lear left the, what I would characterize as the living room area of that apartment, Mr. Kufal then asked her to come over next to him, at which point she alleges he digitally penetrated. And the testimony of Ms. Stowe is somewhat different at an earlier 404 hearing with regard to the exact nature of what happened at that point. And then again at trial, there is a timing as well as a difference in exactly what is done when, which I think was important. That was furthermore, Furthermore, with regard to Ms. Stowe's testimony, she was also previously interviewed in Colorado by a child advocacy center there because of the nature of this case. After the alleged disclosure was made, Ms. Willis lost custody of Ms. Stowe, and she was taken back to her father, who resides in Colorado. So the first forensic interview. With regard to the ineffective assistance of counsel claim, the first one is that counsel for the appellant at trial failed to properly impeach Ms. Stowe with regard to inconsistent statements that she had throughout the three permutations of her. Obviously, the first one is the Child Advocacy Center, which trial counsel tried to get through talking to her mother, Ms. Willis. That was not fully vetted, and there was not a complete record made based on my review of the child advocacy video of what was disclosed in that and the differences between that and trial. That may not be properly preserved for this court to reach an issue on. We would ask if the court finds that that is the case, that it be preserved so that Mr. Cooper can raise that in a post.
Your issue is on cross-examination that he didn't probe into that far
Correct.
Enough? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes. Based on the entire file that I was able to review of trial counsel, I think that there are more significant inconsistencies that he failed to properly probe into through Ms. Stowe, or either to elicit those inconsistencies through his cross-examination of Ms. Willis, which obviously would have been very pertinent in this case. At the very least, there appears to be a change as to whether or not a digital penetration occurred, which would be important in a matter like this, because obviously the difference between it being a 1B felony where it carries the mandatory minimum 15 with a 20 to life and a much lesser penalty for a touching is the digital penetration that is alleged to have occurred.
So are you suggesting in the interrogation in front of the CAC that she didn't allege that then?
My notes and what I was able to review from the trial counsel's file, it appears that she was ambiguous at best about that disclosure, that there was some, I'm not sure, that wasn't dealt with or cross-examined at trial.
But counsel did cross-examine her with regard to the CAC interrogation.
Correct. Right? However, I don't believe that it's clear from the record nor did he skillfully do so in a way that would be appropriate, especially when you're dealing with the difference between a lesser felony and one that could carry, well, you know, 17 and a half sentence on the bottom, where if he was convicted of simply touching versus penetration, that would be the issue.
What's the inconsistency that you're talking about in the 404 hearing?
The 404 hearing is the sequence of events. My
right
notes,
before trial, right?
Correct. The 404 hearing was had before trial. That was about the cell phone that was handed to her. The 404 hearing was specifically about showing Ms. Stowe child pornography, essentially.
Right.
The sequence of events that Ms. Stowe outlines in terms of when Mr. Lear leaves, what happens next, and all of that is inconsistent with her trial testimony. When Lear leaves, when she begins playing, when Kufall calls her over to sit next to her, when she's covered with a blanket, those, and that happened the same day as my recollection, that she testified at the 404, and then she testified at trial, and the sequence of events is different, and that wasn't delved into by trial counsel.
In your brief, I thought you suggested the inconsistency had to do with being handed the device for the
correct
game, yeah, that she was playing?
Correct. In terms of the timing of that and the sequence of events. With regard to the other issues that we're alleging as ineffective assistance of counsel, it appears clear from the record that Mr. Lear and Ms. Willis began to live together shortly after this incident was disclosed in March of 2017. This event occurs on March 16th. Mr. Lear seems to indicate in at least some of his testimony that he began to live with Ms. Willis at some point on March 19th, 2017. I make the allegation that trial counsel failed to properly delve into that, when that relationship started, what was going on in March 2017, obviously, because with regard to Willis and Lear, that could create a motive to lie or fabricate the disclosure, which is important when you consider the appellant's case in chief, where his mother and sister indicated he wasn't even at Lear's residence on.
But it was all in the record, though, the relationship, all those things that you're pointing out. So what are you suggesting, that the counsel didn't do a good enough job with it?
Yes, that he failed to properly question them fully about it, didn't really argue it in closing argument, didn't do the appropriate things to bring it to light. And I think that also fits into the next allegation with regard to Ms. Sanchez. There was a individual that came forward that was disclosed to trial counsel, according to the appellant, that could impeach Ms. Willis about wanting to, quote, get Mr. Kufall, or get him out of the way, is what the information I have from review. That information could have been utilized and should have been to question the credibility of Lear and Willis about why the disclosure is being made, what the nature of their relationship is, when it is, with regard to all those matters. Finally, with regard to the last allegation for ineffective assistance of counsel, they center around a number of exhibits, exhibits 9 through 24, foundation laid by Mr. Lear, and exhibits 28 through 61 that were laid by Ms. Willis. There are a number of Facebook messages between the appellant purportedly and the parties, Willis or Lear, some of which contain, which I would grant, are admissions by the appellant. The problem with the record, as I view it, is that a large majority of 9 through 24 and 28 through 61 contain information that's hearsay, that's bolstering Lear and Willis, and is not really subject to 27106 or the rule. The admissions by the appellant are obviously what they are. They should have come in. But the larger exhibits were offered without objection and then were taken back for the jury to then deliberate on and look at.
Do those statements provide context for his statements?
I think they go well beyond context, Judge. I think that they talk about things that don't have any bearing on. If you look at the exhibits, for example, with Ms. Willis, there is a statement, if something happened, I did it while I was sleeping, it says, according to the Facebook. That's on one page. There's numerous other information that's really not connected to that admission. not germane. I don't think it provides context. I do not see any valid reason in terms of strategy why appellant's trial counsel did not object to large portions of those and allowed them into the record when they appear to be hearsay and beyond the scope of Rule 106 for purposes of complete. And that's all my time.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Matt Lewis, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the state of Nebraska. This is a direct appeal of appellant's conviction of first-degree sexual assault of a child after a jury found him guilty of the same in Lancaster County District Court. Turning first to Mr. Kufall's initial assignment of error that insufficient evidence was presented to support his conviction. Kufall mainly takes issue with the evidence presented used to establish that he subjected the victim, in this case, to digital penetration as an essential element of the offense. However, when viewed in the light most favorable to the state, the evidence presented at trial is sufficient to support his conviction. That evidence consisted of the 15-year-old victim herself describing at length the events leading up to the assault itself, and its aftermath. As for Kufall's contention that there are some inconsistencies for the victim's statement does not stand alone. There are also corroborating witnesses that describe the communications that take place between them and the victim contemporaneous with the day that the assault happened, but then also with his contention that the penetration was revealed sort of slowly and over time, it sort of unravels over time. It comes out that the victim testified that she told police, the CAC worker, and the county attorney that penetration had occurred over the course of several months. So the revelation that the assault had occurred initially is disclosed to the other adult in the room, Mr. Lear, after the offense happens on the 16th. The victim tells her mother, and her mother confronts Kufall, or I guess the mother finds out, I think she finds out through Mr. Lear's mother, who tells the victim's mother, on the 19th, just a couple of days later, who confronts Mr. Kufall about the sexual assault. And then there are the series of ongoing text messages and Facebook messages. I think they span from March to April, early April, discussing what had happened, the sort of content and consistency of what had happened in the apartment that day, and what the assault entailed, which leads the mother to contact the Lincoln Police Department and also the victim's father several weeks later. I think it's the first contact with law enforcement sometime in May. Which leads to the CAC interview in August. And in each one of these instances, the victim is essentially saying penetration occurred. She states on the record that she did not initially tell Mr. Lear or did not tell her mother, specifically did not tell her mother, because she was worried about what it would do to the relationship that she had with her mother, that she was making this allegation about Mr. Kufall. So she essentially just says, he assaulted me, he sexually assaulted me. And it comes out through her contact with law enforcement and through the Child Advocacy Center that there was indeed penetration. The state presented, as I mentioned earlier, several other witnesses that corroborated the victim's story and timeline, including Mr. Lear, who described seeing the victim on the couch with Kufall, a blanket covering their lap, exactly as the victim stated, and a hand moving under the blanket in the area of her genitals, I think in a circular motion is what he says. The victim's mother described communications with the victim and Mr. Kufall, the text messages and the Facebook messages that Mr. Kufall essentially admits that some sort of sexual contact happened. I think at one point he blames having sort of a multiple personality disorder and sort of blames this move or this assault on that, and that he doesn't even recall having done this. And then also the Lincoln police officer who specializes in electronic forensics comes in and confirmed the details of the text messages, when the victim was sending text messages, where these Facebook messages were coming from, who they were communicating, and when. They linked these things to Mr. Kufall's Facebook page. You can see the digital timestamps showing that these text messages are going, where they're going, to who they're going to, that also corroborate the timeline that the victim lays out during her testimony. Kufall's claims overall that the testimony and evidence had some inconsistency sidesteps the fact that each of these witnesses corroborated each other, and the extensive evidence and testimony about the timing of conversations, the events, the texts, interviews, and calls generally supports the same conclusion. Ultimately, at the end of the day as well, this is a question of credibility, and that was for the jury to decide, and they determined that it was Mr. Kufal, and the court accepted that conviction. That the victim did not immediately disclose all the details of her sexual assault to her mother or other witnesses is explained by the victim during her testimony, and then the story is very similar throughout the CAC interviews that she gives later on. If there are no questions on that portion, I'll turn to the ineffective assistance of counsel. Mr. Kufal argues that he received ineffective assistance of counsel, that his trial counsel did not cross-examine the victim about inconsistencies. He did at length during the testimony to some detail. To the point about the 404 hearing, I think there's even a passage at some point during the 404 hearing that's, you know, why aren't you talking more about the penetration? And she says, not asking me about the penetration, I think. The 404 hearing was about the pornography, not the penetrative aspect of the sexual assault. But I believe that there's even a section during the 404 hearing where the exchange goes, while the pornography was playing, Mr. Kufal, was he doing anything to you? She says, he was touching me. Question from the attorney, and where was he touching you at, ma'am? And she says, my vagina. So she is highlighting, getting to some of the penetrative aspects. She doesn't say necessarily he's penetrating my vagina with his finger, but she is sort of walking all around that in a question and answer session that's touching on everything relating to the pornography and not necessarily the penetration itself. Counsel also asked the victim during the trial about the CAC interviews. Those, and that is covered at length during the trial about what was disclosed during the CAC interviews.
My understanding, and maybe I misinterpreted the argument today, but my understanding the argument is more along the lines of there was additional information, records, that counsel could point out inconsistencies. We don't have, are they?
I'm not aware of the full CAC. I don't think the CAC interview is part of the full record. I don't think it was admitted as an exhibit.
So are we able to address that argument of counsel, if that is the actual argument?
I guess perhaps if there's some sort of piece that's being missed for the most part, but I think that the relevant portions of the CAC interview where she is describing penetration is in that part that is coming in where she is talking with the CAC interview, that did make it in. I mean, I guess there could be other questions and commentary that might be out there, but I think that the relevant portions that actually describe the penetration are present in that aspect of the sexual assault as it occurred and went down. Getting to the second point of Mr. Kufal's ineffective assistance of counsel claims, and this is regarding the relationship between Lear and the victim's mother. This was also, the depths of this were sort of well plumbed at the hearing, and I think Mr. Kufal is looking for saying that his attorney, if he would have continued to prod and would have been a bit more aggressive, he could have gotten someone to admit that there was some sort of larger plot, that they were looking to get Mr. Kufal out of the way so they could engage in this relationship. But they do not hide the ball during the testimony at trial about the fact that they moved in together afterwards, they have engaged in a relationship afterwards. Was it done? Was this sexual assault, was the victim placed there to get assaulted, or was there a sexual assault that was sort of implanted in the mind of the victim to create the grounds for this relationship? The defense attorney kind of beats the bush around that quite a bit to try and get that testimony out, and nothing is able to come out of it. That argument is not able to be made because nobody at any point comes up with the sort of overall conspiracy that they were engaged in this to create grounds for them to engage in this relationship outside of Mr. Kufal's presence. Getting to the third point, I think we submit in our brief that we don't think that the record is sufficient to address why the attorney didn't call this extra witness. That could have testified as to whether or not there was some sort of ulterior motive. There's no other sort of information given during the testimony and trial as to why this witness wasn't called. And then moving lastly to the fourth point of the text messages and the Facebook messages. As stated in our brief, we are not aware of an objection that would have worked, and we don't think that there would have been a way to keep these statements out. These are made by Mr. Kufal. They are highly relevant. And to the point that there are certain parts of these messages that might be extraneous or not exactly necessary, they provide significant context. When they admitted the text messages into evidence, they're admitting them screen by screen So you're getting maybe three or four statements, you know, two statements from each side at a time. And the text messages prior to the admittances by Mr. Kufall are relevant in setting up the testimony of who they're talking to, what they're talking about, and show the development of the conversation.
I don't think the objection was relevant. I think so were all of the text messages that were pre-admissions again, or is there additional?
I think that when you view the entire conversation, they lead up, they provide the context for the admissions by Mr. Kufall. So I think that they would still be admissions. They would help provide the context for the admissions by by Mr. Kufall that would make them not hearsay overall and would allow them to continue to be in. If there are no further questions, we ask you to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Is there any time left for the appellant? Thank you. The case is submitted. Counsel is excused. And with that, I am excused.